and welcome to the £1 Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Wayne, and this is episode 21. If you're not sure what this is, if you stumble blindly through the internet, you've ended up at this podcast, well, welcome along. This is episode 21. There's 20 episodes for you to go back and listen to. And on episode 21, I have a very special guest. It's her third time coming here. It's the missus. It's Emma. Say hello, Emma.
Hello.
Are you all right?
Yes, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to have you back, and we're going to be watching another film together. If you're not sure what this is, basically, the whole gist of the programme is... Programme? Yeah, we'll call it programme. Podcast is... I've been out to anywhere you can buy a cheap DVD. Anything that is a pound or less. Anything that will cost you one British pound or less. And it could be anything. As in the case of today's episode, we're going to be watching 2015's 1 and 2.
Come on, keep going.
Hi.
Now!
Mom! Let's go.
I know you two were out last night. I catch you two doing that again, there's gonna be a price to pay. You understand me?
Just playing.
It's not worth it. We have to do what he says.
I don't understand. There was a time when I thought they might be gifted, but I'm scared.
Zach, come on.
What, Ava?
You're just gonna live like this?
I'm done with this.
Understand who I think you are and what you're capable of.
What is wrong with you? They're children. They're our children.
They're more than that.
What is this place? It's almost like a dream.
Why don't we talk about the home that you ran away from?
Get off me!
I didn't do anything.
You sure?
What are you doing? No. What are you doing?
Where's your sister?
This thing we have, we never asked for it. Part of me.
Right, so 1 and 2 from 2015 is directed by Andrew Dross Palermo. It stars Kiernan Shipka, Timothée Chalamet?
Neither. Well, Timothée Chalamet or Timothée Chalamet, he doesn't mind which.
I'm going with Timothée.
Yeah.
Right. Grant Bowler and Elizabeth Reza, I think it is. R-E-R-E-A-Z-Z-E-R. Reza.
I thought it was an S.
Is it? Perhaps it's my terrible handwriting. Reza, then. Oh. Yeah. It has an IMDb score of 5.2 out of 10 and a Rotten Tomatoes score of 47%. I couldn't find out the budget, so I don't know what the gross is either, but I don't think this made it to cinemas, if I'm honest. And I paid the handsome sum of one British pound from CEX for this film, and it is a 15 certificate. Didn't mention that. I'm going to read you the DVD synopsis now. This is directly from the back of the DVD. In a mysterious farmhouse, a family of four maintain a routine and isolated existence. After discovering they possess supernatural abilities, sibling Zach, Timothée Chalamet, and Eva, Kiernan Shipka, begin to unearth a dark family secret. Living under the constant watch of a father that rules with a strict routine and discipline, they live for nightfall for moments of escape. But when their mother falls gravely ill, a dark truth begins to surface, and their world is turned upside down. Zach and Eva must use their otherworldly abilities to escape or risk being torn apart forever. Ooh. A bit of background on the film. The film had its world premiere in 2015 at the Berlin International Film Festival, and it was shot in North Carolina. And that is your lot. I couldn't really find out much else. We'll go with a bit of background on Andrew Dross Palermo. He's the director of the film. He is known as a director and cinematographer on such films as Rich Hill, which is a 2012 documentary, and one episode of Independent Lens, that is. He's a cinematographer. He's probably more better known for his cinematography. He's the cinematographer of Your Next, a film called 6 Years, and The True Adventures of Wolf Boy, which is from last year, I believe. He's a constant collaborator with Adam Wingard, and his directorial debut, which was called Rich Hill, he collaborated with his cousin, Tracy Tragos. Wow, okay. And they won a Sundance Grand Jury Prize. We'll go with Keenan Shipka, who plays Eva in the film. She has 45 actor credits to her name, probably most known to a lot of people for playing Sabrina in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, but she also plays Sally Draper in Mad Men as well. She voiced the character of Marnie in the English dub of Ghibli's When Marnie Was There. We get a lot of this. Kirsten Dunst, when I had her the other week, she does loads of that. And Carrie Elwes, loads and loads and loads of Studio Ghibli stuff. And lots of other voice work as well, from Family Guy to The Legend of Korra. Timothée Chalamet now, who plays Zach, he has 31 actor credits to his name, including Interstellar, Call Me By Your Name, and Lady Bird. And obviously, as this goes out, he is now massively internationally famous, more than he was before, for playing Paul Atreides in the film Dune. He was nominated for an Oscar for Call Me By Your Name and a BAFTA for Beautiful Boy. He was born and raised in Hell's Kitchen in New York. And he auditioned for Spider-Man in Captain America Civil War, but obviously lost out to Tom Holland. His sister also acts for Pauline Chalamet, and you'll have seen her in The King of Staten Island and in a film called The Group Chat. So I'll give you a bit of throwing information at you, Emma. Just take it all in. Sponge it all up. Critical information now. So, it's critical information. Critical response to this film. So, CineViews, Matthew Anderson said, Palermo's first directorial attempt is a disappointing missed opportunity. A film that is visually captivating, but frustratingly devoid of any real substance, clarity, or emotional investment. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned The Legend of Korra. I think that's an Avatar. Last Airbender spin-off.
Gotcha. Right. Screen Anarchy's Peter Martin says, one and two contains certain elements that are best appreciated as a surprise, so I'll leave it at that, except to note that it is a very flavourful, tender movie that feels emotionally rich and strange and still lingers in the brain. So two massively opposing views there. One that says it's a missed opportunity, one that says it sticks with you for days. So we'll throw it over now. Expectation of the film, Emma.
Well, I was surprised that I'd never, ever heard of this film before in my life. There's Timothée Chalamet and Keenan Shipka quite, you know, prominent, and but not even in one of those, here's one of the films of 2015 you might have missed. Not even in one of those lists, never heard of this film. So I'm quite interested to see, because they're both good actors, and let's see what happens.
Well, that's it, yeah. That's exactly how I feel about this. You know, it's as soon as I picked this up, it was a must. I'd never heard of this film. Two massive stars who've got to be much bigger than this film with their careers moving forward. I mean, from my research, I'm going for a sort of Midnight Special, Take Shelter sort of a feel to it. Funny enough, both of those by the same director. A sort of rural supernatural. Maybe something agricultural. Agricultural. Can't read my own writing. Allegorical. Something allegorical. I've obviously watched a trailer for this because I don't do not watching the trailer anymore after some of these films. from the trailer, I was getting a bit of an incest vibe to start with. And then it feels like there's a dark secret that's going to show its head. You know, and then the superpowers for some reason. And it looks quite moody. I mean, I do love quiet, broody films. I am, especially when it's got some sort of dark edge to it. And I have a feeling it's going to hit some beats of like Stephen King sort of films like Carrie and those sort of, you know, teenagers with abilities. So yeah, maybe. But if you're not sure what's going to happen now, if this is your first time entering the podcast, obviously, after we've just told you this, we haven't seen the film. We're going to break now for an intermission and go and watch the film.
No one under 16 will be admitted unless accompanied by a parent or guardian. Only you can judge if your children are mature and intelligent enough to witness the frank and revealing scenes in this film.
Right, so we're back, and we've watched the film. From here on out, you have been warned right now, spoilers, we're going to talk about the whole film from start to finish. If you want to go and watch 2015's 1 and 2, stop the podcast now, go and watch it, come back and see if you agree with everything we say, or if you have a totally different take on it. Emma, initial reaction?
I sort of see where both of those reviewers were coming from that you read earlier, because it's all, I see what they mean about it being a lost opportunity, because there isn't a lot of plot and there isn't a lot that's very original, but I still enjoyed watching it and I would still, you know, say to people, give it a go.
I mean, I feel like I should talk the whole podcast like this after watching the film, because it's so just moody voiceover and it's lots of staccato type William Shatner talking. It's got a bit of Terrence Malick about it, actually.
I was, when you just said that, I was thinking, what's it called?
Oh, that Brilliant Days of Heaven.
No, the,
I'm gonna get shit for that.
Sissy Spacek, Badlands.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. I think this is a very small, insular story that really should open up to a lot of backstory or give you some more backstory. It really doesn't, it's never fully explored.
No, well, I don't know that I agree with that, because there's one sort of exposition dump where it explains how they all ended up where they are. But
I mean, it's moodily shot. It has
you can tell that there's some cinematography experience and expertise there.
Yeah, it has a lovely feel of oppression about it, even though you're in this like open landscape, and I love that sort of light synthy score that's moody when it needs to be. And I love a synthy score, so I'm not really the most abstract of characters with that one, to be fair. I don't think they entirely nail what they're going for, but we'll go through and we'll get to it.
I think some of that problem might be to do with them sort of coming after other films that have done similar things.
Yeah, Midnight Special, Take Shelter, those. Yeah, exactly. So we'll go straight into the plot. So we start underwater, facing the surface, and we see two people jumping into the water, and it's our heroes. It's Eva and... Let's turn the page. It's Eva and Zach, and they're enjoying an evening swim by a lakeside under some clouds with some really heavy synth and haunting synth playing. We go back to their rural farmhouse, and it's all heavy and moody. You know, Daddy's, straight away we see Daddy strict and oppressive. He gets the kids up and ready for a day's work on the farm. It all looks a bit Puritan at this moment, like a bit of turn of the century. There's no sort of real disconnect about where we are in the world in time. And it's almost Amish looking. And we see a giant fence surrounding the property,
which is the first sort of problem it has, because as soon as I saw that fence, I just thought the village.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I wonder if they aren't really at the turn of the century. Ah. I wonder if it's contemporary.
Well, yeah. That night, after family prayers by oil lamps, the parents fall asleep, and we see that Eva.
Was it Eva?
No, it's Eva. No. I've wrote Eva here because I'm fucking useless. Eva can teleport out of her window in a puff of black smoke and ash.
I thought the effects for that were done really well.
Yeah, it's a proper...
And
we see she goes to Zach's window and he does exactly the same. He can teleport out of his window. While Ava and Zach watch planes in the night sky, their mom has a fit under the watchful gaze of the dad. And it's obvious, I mean, it's a brilliant bit of storytelling. It's obvious that this isn't the first time this has happened. Mm. This is a thing that occurs and occurs. And then dad spies them out of the window coming back. The next day, Dad confronts them about being out. Here's a clip.
This thing we have, we never asked for it. But it's part of me. It always has been. But he doesn't see it that way.
observation here. We're just over 10 minutes and it's quiet and it's intriguing. It sucked me right in because it's like you've got a lot of questions about how this setup works and, you know, like a why and a who and a what.
Mm, is it just the two kids that can do it? Can their parents do it?
Exactly.
And because there was a moment with the mum in the kitchen as well where everything seems to go slow motion and almost freeze and you're like, oh, what's going on here then?
But because it's all been a bit moody, you're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That night, mum has another fit while they're praying at dinner, before dinner. Zach tells Eva of the first time he saw mum having a fit and how everything was floating and then just stopped in the air. So she has got supernatural powers, as he just said. We see the kids jumping in the lake using their powers. They use their powers to jump from height. I thought it was just a nice little effect. You know, they're just falling from just above the camera. That night we hear a monologue prayer from the dad, who's angry about his wife and he needs help. His wife's health and his disobedient kids.
Well, he is blaming the children for her illness, isn't he? He's sort of saying because of what they're doing, teleporting and using powers, that it's their fault that she's ill.
I didn't pick up on that, but that makes sense. But I didn't pick up on that at all. So, see, this film's just one of those. It's a layered film. I like that sort of thing. He follows the kids that night and he catches them playing hide-and-seek X-Men style, you know, sort of popping in and out of when they're about to catch each other. And they stay out all night and return the next day. And Dad nails them to the wall. Not figuratively, he fucking nails them to the wall.
Well, that was really tense as well because he gets
via their clothes, by the way.
Yeah, I was about to say because you're not sure what he's going to do with that hammer.
Yeah,
and he's very angry, and you're like, oh, he's not going to nail them through their arms or something.
Yeah,
thankfully it was through their clothes.
This is one of those Puritan moments. He nails Zach and Eva to the wall, and we see that they're there all night, all day, and all night, and Zach pees himself. Mom finds them because she's been in bed. She takes them down and Zach is full of hate. Mom goes and gives Dad a mass bollocking. They're all at ends with each other at this moment. This is really good. There's a really good shot of the family on that night where the dad is the one end of the table and the camera just focuses on him. And then when the camera turns, it looks at those three of them. And that table's not massive, but it feels like it's a fucking gulf, and it's just really well shot. Because when they show the table from a different angle, it's just a normal rectangular table. It's not huge, but it feels like it's vast amounts of space.
It made me wonder as well, where is this going? Because the mum's ill, probably terminally ill. Father's making them hate him, really. Yeah. So what's to stop them from leaving as soon as she's died?
We see after his anger is assuaged that Zach has fallen in line with his dad's authoritarianism. And when then we see Ava go to see Zach, he doesn't want to do any of the, you know, swimming at night and all that sort of thing. He's going to fall in line with his dad. At this moment, there's a little bit of a nice bit of a show don't tell moment where Ava comes across an injured bird and she picks it up and she jumps, not physically jumps, like supernaturally
like
jumps. Yeah, teleports with this bird and to put it back in its nest. And we see that the injured bird, when she lands, is dead. He's completely gone. And it sort of lays a bit of groundwork there.
Yeah.
That they can't do anything other than...
Well, I instantly thought, oh, she's going to kill her dad then, isn't she?
You see, you're far more above this. And anyway, Mum and Dad are still fighting, albeit quietly, about the kids and about their decisions to keep them hidden and locked away. Ava jumps out and goes for Zach, but he turns away. Mum has a fit this night, and it's a really bad one, and she dies. I mean, the film is quiet and it's brooding. It's oppressive. The cinematographer is this, I think it's this lady called Autumn Derold. Obviously been chosen by... I have to go back and look at his name again because I can't remember it, by Droz Palermo, because they share the same vision. I'm assuming that he's... I've seen Your Next, he's got some very lovely lingering shots, and I feel like they share that same sort of vision. You know, everything. There's some fantastic, you know, shots of dark rooms, and it reminded me of Ari Aster and stuff like Hereditary.
Mm.
You know, there's menace in those shots. And this isn't that sort of film, but it sort of crept up on me a bit. I was like, oh, I'm not happy with that. You know, this sort of stark grey room and you're lingering too long. But it's brilliant. Anyway, dad goes mad because of the mom dying. He goes and gets Zach and he throws him in a closet.
He goes looking for them, and you get the feeling that he's thinking they're not going to be in bed. It's their fault she's died. But he actually finds Zach there, not expecting to find him in bed where he wants him to be.
So he goes to Ava's room to wait for her. When she returns, he tells her of his mom, and she turns to go and see her mom, and it all sort of like turns into a bit of argy-bargy.
And there was some more show-don't-tell here, because she heads for her bedroom window to get away from him, and he said, no windows, and drags her away from it. And you go, oh, they have to see where they're going to teleport to in order to be able to do it.
See, you picked up on this. I missed this completely. And it comes further down. I've wrote it further down.
And then it trickles back again, because you think, that's why he put Zach in the closet, because there are no windows and he can't go anywhere. That's why he nailed them to the wall facing the wall, because they can't see anywhere at all to go anywhere.
It's right at the end of this note I've wrote, Emma's window theory. Anyway, so as she's trying to multiply jump away from her dad, she jumps and smashes her face into the ceiling and falls and knocks herself out. Oh, all this time, Zach is trapped in the closet.
You go ahead and close the door behind you. Go on.
What is it?
She's gone. Stop.
I want to be with her.
I should have done this a long time ago. Don't make this any harder. Get away from that window. Come on.
Dad takes Eva to the river in a sack, with a sack on her head, like you say, Emma, so she can't see where she's going. He puts her in a boat and he just sends her off down the river. Very
Moses.
New Testament, yeah. Is it New Testament?
Old Testament.
Old Testament, sorry, yeah. We see Dad go back to the house. He buries Mom and he buries Eva's dress as a sort of effigy.
Symbolic. Yeah, she's dead to us now.
Yeah. Ava comes to, and she finds out she's in a car, and then she's in a hospital. Very, very good, this. It's sort of like, you see it from her perspective. She just sort of, it's sort of like a waking sort of fever dream almost. She's in the back of this car, she wakes up in the hospital, and she has a sort of sepia dream of home and her mother and her brother, not her father. Telling that she comes to in the hospital, and she puts her clothes on and goes to try and get out. A doctor finds her. She completely wigs out on him, and he says, "Oh, you've finally woken up." And she just turns, runs, and jumps, teleports through this window,
straight for the window, and has gone outside.
Zaki's finally let out by his dad.
She's gone, Zach.
Where is she?
I took care of her. They're both at peace.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean.
You didn't.
Go see for yourself.
After being led to believe she's dead, I believe the dad leads him to believe that he murdered her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to go back and check that out.
Which, again, you're like, well, you're just making your son hate you. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah. So he goes to the grave and he grieves for his mom and his sister at the graveside. There's lots of quiet talking like this. And I'll see you again and all this sort of stuff. Ava is lost and alone in this town. It's all unnamed, by the way. We have no idea where this is. It's just rural America. Somewhere in the Midwest, maybe. I'm not sure. And she's found by a homeless woman who is kind to her. And there's like no judgment from her at all. She just says, oh, you know, we're all here in the same sort of boat. And she sits by a fire and they listen to some bloke play some blues. And this, there's observation here for me that this bloke looks like he's got a fake beard. It's very.
I think it was just very dark and very thick, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Because it did look a bit strange, and then you see him talk and sing, and it's like, oh no, that is a real beard.
It's yeah, it looks stuck on because you're expected to be a homeless man's beard, but this is manicured and dyed with
hipster beard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, just, he can play guitar. Yeah, but his beard's too good. It's fine, don't worry about it. Some twat in a podcast will pick up on it in 6 years' time. It's yeah. fine. They're disrupted or disturbed by some cops. And in fear, Ava jumps straight out of this building away from them all. Back to Zach, who is a completely indie boy, depressed now, and begins to become angry and vengeful.
Mom always saw it as a gift. Never doubted. But he's scared and weak. I don't know how he can live with himself. I want to make him feel what I feel.
Ava has been wandering and she finds some kids at a park at night. These kids are all from sheltered accommodation. And her new friend says, "Why don't you come back to the shelter?" She goes and sees a counsellor. And this counsellor, it's all very fast, this. There's no sort of... Mm. It's all quick cuts and this is how it's happened. And
they don't seem to probe her very deeply either, because they're asking her questions about where she's come from. But I know they probably think she's traumatised and they don't want to upset her. But you would ask, yeah, but where was your home?
Mm.
And she'd probably say, I don't know, because she didn't know. But they didn't really ask her.
No. Yeah, she lies to the counsellor, and then sort of, as she's lying, you see her daydreaming of Zach and her mom and the farm and the farmhouse. Back at the farm, Dad says, you're going to have to speak to me sometime. Zach is stoking the fire and ominously holding a poker. Mm. And I thought it was coming then, to be honest.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, he's the way he holds that poker and the way they linger on him looking at it, it's just very well shot again, very well done. Even though they're separated, the siblings feel a connection as they sleep, sort of like heartbeats, isn't it? That's how it's portrayed, yeah. Ava concentrates on this connection, it's, like I say, his heartbeat, and it begins to run towards it and jump towards it and teleport. It's very good that she's run down the road just...
Yeah, a little bit further.
Back at the farm, Dad tries to explain himself, and it turns out that he also grew up in the compound. This is the exposition dump, Emma was saying. He also grew up on the compound, and he tells of the community of others where they...
Because they'd been this community somewhere else of... So they sort of, he spoke about the tales of children disappearing, which is like the teleportation bit, and that some of the adults got ill, which is like his wife, and he was saying that there was a sort of falling out and a schism in the community, and that some of the people moved to where they are now, and they were sort of living behind the big walls and keeping the rest of the world out, that they sort of slowly dwindled away and died, and they were the only ones that were left.
It's a community that's been destroyed by loss and folklore. That's what I've wrote down here. He tells Zach in like a very candid moment that he was the firstborn, and it was great. It was just him, the mom, and Zach. And then in no uncertain terms, he says, Ava came along and ruined it. That's what he says.
As you can sit here and talk and talk.
Zach, I am telling you the truth. I'm not saying I'm without fault here. I'm not. But I need you to understand.
You understand how delusional you are?
Not to, and sit down.
Sit down! I don't understand for you killing Ava!
Stop! I need you to calm down, listen to me. I need you to understand something.
I will never forgive you for killing
Zach,
me.
I need you to understand who I think you are and what you're capable
Let
of.
Let go of me.
Zach, what are you doing? Zach, no, what are you doing?
In anger at this confrontation, Zach jumps with his dad, teleports with his dad, holding his dad, and he kills him. Zach visits Ava's grave. All this time, Ava is still jumping to try and find him using her heart compass. Zach says, I keep expecting to see you. Well, just hang on a bit longer, son. Imagine if you're not expecting it, you turn around and have a fucking heart attack when you see her. Holy shit, it's a fucking ghost. Ava arrives at the compound wall, which is...
I love this bit as well. Yeah. It's really well done.
This bit in the trailer is really misleading to this film. If you're expecting an X-Men film here, and it's not that.
Yeah.
It's really not. It's a quiet little indie superhero-y type film that's very insular. We're going to get into this anyway. So Ava arrives at the compound and she jumps.
Because I thought she was going to make a hole in the fence so she could see through it. Yeah. But she doesn't.
Well, I thought she was going to jump to the top of the wall. As it turns out, she didn't either of these things, and she jumps like a mile 1,000 feet
into
the fucking sky.
Well, yeah, she just looks up over the wall and teleports herself into the sky.
She sort of supercharges, doesn't she? Like, all the ground starts to sort of levitate a little bit, and she gets like a haze around her. And then the next thing you know, she's just falling.
Yeah. It's like, oh my word.
And then what she does is, as she's falling, she then jumps again to about 3 feet. Just inside the wall, but 3 feet from the ground.
Yeah, and just safely falls to the ground instead
fucking
of dying. To have the presence of mind, though, to launch yourself like miles up into the air and then not be so terrified that you forget to jump again.
For me, it's the whole thing of, okay, we're in a world with superheroes, or we're in a world with special powered children and Puritan, you know, schismed families. Okay, we've got to suspend disbelief. The terminal velocity of falling that fast, even at 3 feet, you've
got to have your wits about you.
Yeah, bright. Your back could break, surely. Anyway, off topic.
As long as you remember to teleport quickly enough, you would be okay, I think. But it's the shock and
not
fear of finding yourself falling like that. You know, unexpected to be, oh shit, and then it's too late.
Let's not worry about the trigonometry of all that, because that'll get too much. So yes, she gets on the other side. They reunite and they bury their dad. I mean, that would be harrowing because it's been fucking days.
Well, no, if I was Ava, I'd be like, yes.
I'm on about just burying him.
They're used to the hard farm work. It's fine.
Ava says bye to mom. And they decide to burn the farmhouse down as this song called Be True by Jeremy Freeze plays out. They hold hands and look at this burning farmhouse.
But this is the sort of film where you have that ending and I'm thinking, I want to see what happens next, though. They've got no birth certificates. They've got no national security number. What are they going to say when they wander out into the world? Feign amnesia.
And after all this, the end. Emma, your sum up and reaction to the film then.
I really enjoyed it, but I can understand why it didn't do very well, because there isn't much plot there, and I think it's probably the better version of The Village, but The Village had already happened, so it's primed you for this film and it's ruined some of the twists. And I think if this had been first, then maybe it would have done better.
I mean, it's a quiet, slow burn of a film.
Yeah.
And to say it's less than 90 minutes long, it's about 86 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, it doesn't outstay its welcome.
It really doesn't, no. It is a show, don't tell sort of a film, but I could have done with a bit more tell. Just because, I mean, I actually like this film. I think this film's decent. There's a lot of intrigue. And a lesser director maybe would have shoehorned a lot more flashback scene and things like that. But the budget probably didn't allow for that. And I don't think he's that sort of flashy director, if I'm honest.
It's not really that sort of story, though.
No.
Because it's not... It's very much setting out to just be a very intimate look at this family. And it opens up a tiny bit, but it's not about the wider story. It's not about going out into the world with the powers, even really. It sort of felt a bit prodigal daughter when she was out in the world, and that she was so focused inward. She was not about, ooh, I'm out in the world, I can be free now. That wasn't how she felt about it at all. which isn't that surprising because she's led this sheltered life and not known anything but the home farm for her whole life.
Mm.
And she was just a bit, I don't know what I'm doing now. Oh, okay, I'll go to this girl's home. And then when she realises that she has a way to get home to her brother, that's exactly what she does straight away.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've got the same sort of, it's a story of teenage rebellion, that is, but it just so happens that these teenagers have nowhere to go and have superpowers.
Mm.
And you mentioned at the start, it's Badlands of a fashion.
Yeah,
you know?
It's just their brother and sister, not yeah. a couple.
There is a hint of incest, but it's handled with that sort of really soft hand of, is it incest or are they just really close?
I think there is, you see. I think that might be from the trailer, because I think the trailer sort of makes you think in that direction, but I don't think the film itself does. And I think the trailer is maybe making you think the dad is thinking that about them, but again, I don't think the film is making you think that.
I mean, Kiernan Shipka and Timothy Chalamet, they just prove they're fucking stars for me in this, the pair of them. You're asking these two, at this point in time, sort of nobodies to carry this small...
And you totally believe them. You buy it, understand the differences and you can understand why he'd want to just keep his head down and do as their dad says. And you can understand why she would want to rebel and challenge him.
Yeah.
It's all there and it's all believable.
I completely agree. It's that's what it is. It's told with complete truth, as it were. There's some lovely lingering photography throughout this. I'd be remiss not to talk about that, because it is a film of 86 minutes with some really gorgeous camera work. And I couldn't find out the budget. I can't imagine it being more than a couple of million, if that. And the way it's handled and shot, there's no pedestrian shot. It's like, even if you're just shooting something silly, like going up the stairs, they find an interesting way of portraying that shot. Even if it's just the top of the stairs looking over onto the stairs coming up. And I've watched a few films recently where especially reviewing it, where you get to the point where you go, you could have done something different though. You could have done a reverse angle. You could have done something different. They're doing this. It keeps it interesting.
It's one of those low budget films that you can point to and say, if you don't have much money to make your film, do something like that.
Yeah, do something interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it subverted my expectation, because I was expecting a lot of confrontation. You know, there's two kids with superpowers on a insular farmhouse. I was going for a sort of Frankenstein feel, if I'm honest, where, you know, they're the outsiders on the outside of town. And, we're having them, your kind round here, you know, come and burn. And it doesn't happen at any point in the film. There's like a moment, but it's sort of more Kiernan Shipka. Kiernan Shipka's either feeling it, that she's not the same as these people, rather than the other way around, which is an interesting perspective, I suppose. And like I say, maybe that's, you know, the confrontation is what I've come to expect.
And the thing about me expecting her to kill the father, not Zach, and yeah, that even as she was heading home, I was like, when she gets there, she's going to kill him. But I think that was well done as well, and it was a good plot point, because it was the less damaging way for him to die and for them to become free, because it wasn't that Zach was angry and murderous, it was an accident.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that she was angry and murderous and did it and then couldn't forgive herself and any of that, it was just an accident.
It's more of a crime of passion than it is anything else. He doesn't have the tools.
Well, it's just reflex, isn't it? Yeah. He grabs his dad because he's angry with him, and reflex makes him teleport, and that kills him. He doesn't even know that if he did that, it would kill him.
Mm. Like I say, it's one of those. There's no malice in it. It's just what happens. He instantly regrets it. You can see it, and it's again brilliantly acted by Timothée Chalamet. Any more to add, Emma?
No.
Excellent. Okay, so we'll wind up to the verdict now.
Gentlemen of the jury, you've reached the verdict.
Considering all the facts and arguments presented by both counsel, and after careful deliberation,
the jury will retire and consider the evidence.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
prepare to be judged.
So, Emma, out of a pound, how much would you pay for this?
This
is the sliding scale of 100.
Yeah. I'd probably say 90p. Because it wasn't a perfect film, and I can understand what people's problems are with it, because it doesn't have a lot of meat to it.
Mm.
It is interesting. It makes you think, and it's beautifully shot, and the effects are really well done, and I would recommend it to someone.
Yeah, the right person. I think someone would be like, "What the fuck was that?" But yeah, I'm the same. If you're into a bit of indie sort of lo-fi sci-fi, then this is right up your street, and it's for nothing else. If you're a Timothée Chalamet, you know, where you want to see where he came from and where Kenan Shipka came from, this is the way to.
If you want to see if someone took the village off on a tangent and made a better film, then you could watch this.
And it's nowhere near it as long as fucking 2 hours 15 minutes of The Village. Yeah, you give it 90 pence. I'm always a bit harsher because I watch a lot of these fucking things. I'm going for 65p on this because it's not that I disliked it at all. The 2015 film 1 and 2 gets an average score of 77.5p. So we're going into
not pre decimal, but just after pre decimal.
Yeah. Going off on a real tangent here. But yeah, 77.5 out of a pound. And I've just spoiled the whole damn film for you, but if you like what we've said, I'd definitely go and see it or find it out if you can. Emma, thank you very much for coming and being on this
thank
episode
you
with me.
For having me.
All you did there. And we watched the film together, so it made sense. If you like the podcast, subscribe and all that jazz, you know what to do. Hit me up on Twitter if you got any comments or anything like that. If you like to, I'm not forcing you to do any of this. You don't even have to listen to if you don't want to. I'm not selling this very well, am I? All that's really left to say is I've been Wayne, and thank you for listening to the £1 Movie Podcast. See you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.